Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. In the studio today, we have Tucson Fire Department, the whole department. No, actually, we just have Michael here. And on the telephone, we have a fire inspector, Jimmy. And we want to say good morning to the chief, because we know he's listening, and we will try not to get anybody fired today. How's everybody doing?
Doing well, Sherry. Thanks so much for having us on. It's a pleasure.
Jimmy, how you doing?
Having a great morning.
Yeah?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Okay. We want to talk a little bit about COVID. Has COVID changed your job at all, how you respond to calls or anything? What's going on with that? Jimmy?
From my perspective, I work in the Tucson Fire Prevention Division, and we have a responsibility of going out into the public and going to businesses, and as opposed to responding to emergencies, we try to be proactive and prevent emergencies. So we try to verify that businesses have a certain amount of life safety measures in place. For us, when COVID really struck and we hit our peak in the summer, a lot of businesses were closing down. We were trying to keep away from the public because we didn't quite know the risk and exposures at that time. So it really made it difficult getting out into the public and getting out to these businesses and doing inspections. And the difficult problem was, we all know that financially it was difficult on a lot of businesses, especially small ones. So it's difficult to go in and do an inspection and require a certain amount of life safety measures that need to be completed that may have a little financial impact on them. So that definitely created a little bit of an issue for us, and we really had to rethink how we did our inspections, timelines that were given. So it definitely changed from that perspective.
So other than that, you're not showing up to calls with hazmat suits on, are you?
Well, at this point, like I said, I am not working out in the field. I was out in the field for about 15 years running emergency calls. And I know for the men and women out there still running those calls, it is a bit of an issue, especially in going to what we call COVID hotspots. These are areas in town where we have a higher percentage of COVID. So they definitely had to take their precautions with what's called personal protective equipment. So it definitely took a toll on the emergency responders when they had to respond to these calls and take quite a few extra measures to protect themselves and to protect the public.
So, Jimmy, how long have you been on the department?
I've been on the department 20 years. That just came up on July for me.
Oh, well, congratulations. And what did you do before then?
So before then, I was a student, born and raised in Tucson, went to Palo Verde High School. I then attended the University of Arizona. After that, I did about a year of substitute teaching. And I applied for the Tucson Fire Department, got on when I was 24. So
you've been here the whole time.
Yeah, I was pretty fortunate to get on at a young age, and it was a great decision for me.
Very cool. Michael, how long have you been on the department?
So I've been on for just a little under a year now, but I have been a huge fan of the Tucson Fire Department ever since my family moved here when I was 14 years old.
Where are you from?
Family's originally from New York. But I spent a lot of time overseas, and spent a lot of time moving across this beautiful country of ours, working as a TV news anchor and reporter for a number of years before joining this department.
You need to talk into your microphone. So John's like waving. So you've got experience here. You could be doing the show.
Oh, you know, I did have a radio show, as we were talking about, Sherry, in college. It was a little bit different than what we're doing right now. Maybe a little less informative. But definitely always a fun time.
Okay, we're getting ready for the holidays. The next 2 months are like crazy with celebrations. What do we want to tell the public to do and not to do to prepare for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's?
Well, one thing I guess I'll just say before Jimmy jumps into this as the real expert is that, you know, we've just been stressing, you know, people all week that Thanksgiving, there are more home cooking fires on Thanksgiving than any other day of the year by far. And so we, you know, just as people get together or try and socially distance appropriately and get together, and cook these fantastic meals. So just do so as safely as possible, and just remember all the, you know, all those safety tips that we like to tell people about and go over that I'm sure we'll go over with Jimmy right now.
Like deep frying your turkeys.
That's a big one. We plan on putting together a little demonstration of our own as a fire department coming up here next week. We'll have that on our social media pages and things like that of what not to do and what to do. But yeah, Jimmy, I mean, I'm sure that you've seen this come up as an issue many, many times.
What day are you going to be doing that demonstration?
We're shooting to do it Wednesday, but
so what if everybody
exactly
shows
sure
up
yet.
With a knife and forks because you're going to be frying a turkey?
The biggest one in town, yes.
There you go. Jimmy, what, you know, I know people, I've seen people fry their turkeys in the house. I've never thought it was a great idea. What precautions should they be taking?
No, we definitely don't suggest frying a turkey in the house. So when it comes to deep frying turkeys, anytime you're operating any kind of equipment, always follow the manufacturer's instructions. I know that sounds very elementary and simple, but it really is the truth. Read the manufacturer's instructions on what they suggest and how they suggest to cook. That'll tell you a lot right there. I can't stress that enough. Fry the turkey away from any combustibles, away from the house, you know, about 20 feet. Look at what's underneath you. Make sure you're not frying in any dry grass, anything that could possibly be lit on fire. So getting that fried turkey away from combustibles. And when we say combustibles, we talk about, like I would say, anything that can light on fire very easily. Dry brush, dry grass, small scrap wood, anything that can
kitchen curtains, pot holders.
So, and anytime you're dealing with grease, if there happens to be a fire, you never want to throw water on grease. It does two things. Number one is that water usually splashes and it usually spreads that grease out. So now, instead of having a fire that's contained, you have a fire that is spread out farther. So now you have a bigger fire. And the other thing is, typically the water will basically sink down and the grease will rise, and so it doesn't put out the fire. So when you're talking about a grease fire, whether it's you're frying your turkey or let's say you're inside and you're cooking on your stove and you have some kind of small fire, you can, one is I would always suggest to go to your local hardware store and buy what's called a Class K extinguisher. The K for kitchen grease, kitchen laid in grease.
Oh.
That is the type of extinguisher that you want to use should you have any type of kitchen fire. You don't want to use your regular ABC extinguishers. You would rather use that Class K extinguisher. Typically, they're either white or silver. The other thing is, if you can, turn off the heat, if it's safe to do, or preferably put a metal lid on the fire, so you're smothering fire. You're taking the oxygen away from the fire.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't know that you had a fire extinguisher specifically for the kitchen. That's awesome.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, most hardware stores are going to have those.
Okay. I want to hear stories. I want to hear your horror stories. What kind of calls have you answered where, you know, you just like scratch your head and go, this is totally preventable? All of them?
Well, we can't get into, all of it. No, we can't get into specifics here. You know, there's certain emergencies, crazy things happen out there, and that's why we're here. And not all emergencies are mistakes by people. They are, a lot of times there's accidents. There's wild things that happen. But yeah, you know, we've had people, you know, adults trying to stuff themselves in kid swings. You know, when you go to a park and you have the little swing for the toddler where you have the two little leg holes that you put yourself in.
Oh my God.
We've had people try to stuff themselves in that and then they can't get out. So
I'd leave them there.
You could use your imagination, but you know, we do get called on such, if you want to call them emergencies such as that, and they are, you know, for the person that's having that emergency, it can be kind of embarrassing for them. But sometimes, you know, sometimes they're a little nervous and they are scared. So we do have to go there and be professional, even though it's a little funny at times.
Do you laugh or do you try not to laugh? I would laugh.
We try to be as professional as possible, but you know, you kind of got to read the room, so to speak. You kind of read the people around you, those who are involved in it. If they're kind of laughing and they understand it's kind of a comical scene, then you can kind of go with it. But if they're a little terrified and they're a little nervous or spooked, then you got to keep that. So you got
to have to know your customer.
Yes, know your customer. Well said.
You know, just to add to that, Sherry, one thing that I've really seen, and there was an uptick in it over the summer when it comes to preventable, type situations, is properly disposing of smoking materials.
Yes.
You know, we see so many people, I mean, that they fall asleep with a cigarette in their hand outside, it falls out of their hand, falls into some grass, lights up the side of their house, and then we're there. Those kind of calls just kind of seem to pop up over the summer, and that's why, you know, we always just try and stress to really put those out, you know, douse it in water, really just make sure that those are completely out. And,
if you're sleepy, you shouldn't be smoking a cigarette.
Right, exactly.
People laying down in bed smoking a cigarette.
Those two activities don't go together.
No, they don't. Not at all.
And, you know, Sherry, to tell spin off what Michael was saying, candles in the house.
Yes.
I know it's not smoking, but people really don't understand how dangerous candles can be. Keep those lit candles away from, once again, the word is combustibles, any curtains, any papers. They need to be away from anything that can readily catch fire. And do not leave a candle unattended. You'd be surprised how many people light those candles and then take off for a few hours, whatever they're doing.
Absolutely.
I know they want to make that house smell good, but you have to be constantly at home if you have a candle.
Or don't fall asleep with a candle lit.
There you go.
We had a fatal fire earlier this year that involved candles. So,
okay, if you're going to have candles on your Thanksgiving table, put the fire extinguisher right next to it. There you go.
That's right.
I want to know, is there a difference, back to the grease fire, is there a difference between a grease fire and an oil fire?
Well, when you say oil, that's kind of a broad term. You know, when you talk about oils, you could talk about automotive oils. But, no, grease fires burn at a much hotter temperature, and it's much easier for them to ignite. When we say grease, we're talking about kitchen grease from food.
Right.
Anytime you cook a food that has a fatty substance to it. So, oil kind of branches out to a lot of different oils, so that would be kind of a difficult question to ask. But
well, I was wondering, because I went to a place in the garage I was working. I had to go to this house. And in the garage, okay, there was just like grease everywhere. And my first thought was, wow, this is fire hazard. But then I was comparing in my head, I'm like, what's the difference between a grease fire and an oil fire? And
okay,
are they
so
both?
Very similar but different properties. When you're talking about oils, you're talking about probably, like we said, a repair garage with motor fuels. Well, they're class 3B fuels, we call them. They're on the lower end of the fire hazard spectrum, quite honestly. However, if you do light them, they, like I said, they burn at a much hotter temperature, and they're much more difficult to put out. But they are a lot more difficult to ignite. So the fire code is a little less strict when it comes to oils, like motor oil that you put in your car, or any kind of oil that deals with engines or repair garages. Grease fires, they light a lot more easy. And when you're talking about grease in a kitchen, you're already having high temperatures from the cooking environment as it is. So you hope when you're going to a repair garage, you're not having fire or any kind of high temperatures in there. That's one reason why in a repair garage, anytime you do with fuels, you have to have certain electrical code requirements that are in place. Electrical outlets a certain amount of inches above the ground where vapors settle. You don't want to have warming heaters in that garage because that creates a heat source. So, yes, there is a little bit of difference between an oil fire when you're talking about oils, as in repair garages and vehicles, or the oils, grease, kitchen oil. Mm-hmm. Does that kind of answer your question? I'm sorry if I got a little off there.
No, that does answer the question. Do they have a special letter on their fire extinguisher?
That would be a no. You can just use an ABC extinguisher.
Just a regular ABC.
Right.
Okay, Michael, you...
Oh, no, and then, of course, I was... if you're talking about oil, gas fires, that's, of course, another issue that we deal with as well, which does require different firefighting methods to take care of. And I'm sure, you've seen at airports they have big specialized fire trucks because they deal with foam and, having to deal with big oil and gasoline fires is a much different thing.
Okay, Nathan has a question.
Yeah, I do. So you were talking about grease fires and how water is not very effective at putting it out. So what happens if you have a large-scale fire that's going to take down a house or something, How do you go about putting that out?
Calling us.
So when you
what do you do? Is it
go ahead, Jimmy.
Like in the Sears Tower, they used a Halon system.
So when you're talking about a large scale fire, generally speaking, when you're talking about any home, any residential home, it's going to be a normal combustible fire that has woods, that has fabrics, that has mattresses, that has your cabinets. Like I said, the woods from cat. There's a lot of combustibles in there. Those fires generally are put out by water. Water, it cools it down, and it cools it down so there was no heat source, and then it doesn't have fire. So fire is always created by three different, it's called a fire tetrahedron. There's three different sources. You need to have your heat source. You need to have your fuel, which would be wood, fabric, grass, anything of that such. And then you have to have oxygen. So what we need to do is we need to look at how is that fire started, what kind of fire is it, and what part of that fire triangle do we need to take out. So when it comes to a home fire, a residential fire, we're cooling that fire down. We're taking the heat away. That's why on like grease fires, a lot of times you can't take the heat away. They burn so hot that a water can't cool it. It spreads it. So you need to suppress it with something. You need to have put something on it that takes the oxygen away. So you're basically your basic residential fire, it's going to be water. If it's a deep-seated fire where the water can't penetrate, that's where we'll use a foam, firefighting foam, that kind of lays over the fire, and it separates the fuel from the oxygen.
Do they ever use Halon anymore?
High rises. I know there's some Halon. Yeah, you know, I'm not terribly sure on that. I know they used to use Halon fire extinguishing systems. I do know they are out there. That's not one of my specialties, so at this moment I couldn't give you a real educated answer on that.
Okay. Do either of you cook for the holiday? Do you have your specialty dish? Jimmy, what do you prepare for Thanksgiving?
You know what? I'm a dessert guy. I love pies. I love blueberry pie. I love turkey too, but my wife cooks an awesome sweet potato casserole, and I have such a big family here since I was born and raised here that we kind of have like a potluck meal. Now, that's going to change a little bit because of COVID. We're going to keep it a little smaller, and we're definitely going to be outside. But this is going to sound crazy. I'm 44 years old, and I hate to say this, but I've never cooked a turkey because the turkey is like my grandparents. That's their thing. They do the turkey. So we always get stuck with the sides. So blueberry pie. That's what it is for me.
Okay, what about you, Michael?
Well, I'm pretty lucky because I have a couple older sisters who are excellent cooks, and so it's usually just up to me to bring some drinks or something like that to our Thanksgiving meal. I'm pretty spoiled that way, and I'm lucky enough to, well, not like Jimmy, have my entire family here, but most of my immediate family, and it's always a wonderful experience that I get to just come and enjoy.
Yeah, it's like my dad. He would just, you know, he didn't know how it happened. It just appeared on the table.
Right.
There it is. Come and eat. So what about preparing for the holiday as far as decorating? I know I've seen people have plug-in after plug-in after plug-in, and, you know, here's this one extension cord with like 50 things plugging up. What do you tell people to do when they're decorating? Jimmy?
So, you know, as we all know, extension cords are just meant to be a temporary extension of your electrical system of your house, temporarily. So big thing on extension cords is don't keep them up year-round. They're not meant to be up year-round. A lot of them are not meant to withstand the environmental conditions from weather, from water to the UV, the sun. So they definitely break down, and that's when they become a fire hazard. As far as Christmas decorations, once again, I know this is going to kind of sound generic, but read the manufacturer's instruction on that cord.
You mean those directions that I threw away?
Yeah. You know, I've done it too in the past. I'm guilty as well. I know it's difficult, but they will tell you the maximum amount of strings that you connect, that you can connect to your outlet. Because each house has a different amount of amps that run, and depending on how much you connect, how many watts you connect up to that system, it can only handle so much before that breaker pops. And that's hoping that you have a house where the breaker is working appropriately and it does pop when the load gets too hot. So the best thing you can do, read those manufacturer's instructions and adhere to what they say on how many lights you can connect. The great thing today is we have LED lights. They take much less wattage than the regular incandescent that we've seen for over the years. So if somehow you can get LED Christmas lights decorations, that is the way to go, just from a fire safety, life safety standard.
Now, you said the extension cords, there's inside ones and outside ones. Wouldn't it be smart to just buy all outside ones, even if they were inside?
I guess you could. You know, they're insulated better, they're wrapped better, so they're built to withstand environmental conditions. But, you know, they can definitely come at a bit more of a cost. And I know, especially these times, this time of year and what's going on, you know, all that little bit adds up. So the wise thing to do, yes, you could buy exterior extension cords, but they're going to cost you a little bit more, definitely.
We come across those. We do come across those fires. I mean, maybe I was at one 2.5 weeks ago that was sparked outside because of a faulty extension cord outside.
So, one that maybe should have been inside instead of outside?
Right, one that was likely being used year-round.
Inappropriate.
Not as a temporary way to get power.
Okay, these are things to keep in mind while you're decorating your house.
One thing that I definitely wanted to mention when it comes to having a tree, real or synthetic, is, you know, you definitely don't want to keep that tree anywhere near a space heater or your fireplace. I mean, I know they're rare around here, but they do exist. Space heaters, of course, are much more common. But that's definitely a risk that firefighters run across every year.
Okay, where do you put your Christmas tree? Where do you put your Christmas tree?
Where do I put my Christmas tree? By a window, but not close to any heat source, any extension cord, anything like that.
Okay. And how many lights do you put on your tree? Is there a limit, or, you know?
Is there a Christmas rule?
Some trees already lit up. Can you add more lights? Is it safe?
It has to be seen from 2 blocks away, the lights. That's
okay.
The Christmas rule.
All right.
No, once again, you get a lot of people now are getting those pre-lit trees. That's already lit for you. That's a great way to go. If you don't have a pre-lit tree, here it goes again. I hate to say it, but manufacturer's instructions. Look at that light cord set. There's that little tag on it. It'll tell you, typically, how many watts or how many amps that one takes and how many sets. Usually on the box, it'll say how many sets you can combine back-to-back. And that's always the safest way to go.
All right. Don't pull a Clark Griswold. No vacation. No. Yeah.
We'll try not to do that. Okay. I think we're going to go ahead.
I do have one more thing. Christmas trees get real dry, the real ones. So when you're going to pick a Christmas tree out, if you're getting a real tree, grab that tree, grab the branch, squeeze it a little bit, and then pull out. If you have a lot of those little needles that fall off in your hands, it's too dry. Go on, move on to a next one. You want one that's really fresh, right? That's not wilting a little bit. And when you grab it and you pull on it, a lot of needles don't fall off. So when you put that house in your home, put that tree in your home.
I've been there.
Yeah. Daily, look at the water levels. Make sure you're keeping water in that tree so it can sustain itself as long as possible. And the minute that tree is getting too dry, maybe every week do that test again. The minute that tree gets too dry, you need to dispose of it properly. There's going to be recycling centers all over the city of Tucson, but those trees, when they are dry, and if they get exposed to a heat source, they go up. Man, they go up quick. And those are pretty scary. Those are really scary. I think we've all seen videos. Everyone can get on YouTube and look at Christmas tree fires. And if you see a Christmas tree fire on YouTube, you're definitely going to think twice about getting a real tree, or you're going to make sure that daily you're checking the water levels in that thing.
Or tape a picture of one on your wall. There's the tree.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few.
Hi, I'm Nathan Chabon, producer for the Law Matters live show that airs Saturday mornings at 8, when our listeners ask questions of the people who have answers. On our next show, James Traynor III, chair for the Federal Election Committee, gives us an update on election violations and lawsuits. This show depends on your support. Please go to lawmatters1030.org to contribute. If you missed us live, check out Law Matters on iTunes, Google Play, and of course, lawmatters1030.org website. Now get your questions ready and join our conversation at 790-2040.
Hi, this is Sherry. If you think your current interest rate is high and refinancing is on your mind, give me a call at 520-310-9900. Maybe you're thinking about purchasing a new home while rates are low. Give me a call at 520-310-9900. Perhaps you just want to know how a reverse mortgage can improve your life. Give me a call at 520-310-9900. I can help you with all your mortgage needs, and I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks.
Daylight is fading and the temperature is dropping. You're not only cold, hungry, and lost in a densely wooded area, you're injured. Time is of the essence. SARCI is a highly trained team of dedicated volunteers who work closely with Pima County Search and Rescue to help people in critical situations just like this. To join an exclusive team of heroes, go to sarci.org. That's SARCI.org. We need your knowledge, experience, and of course, your generous spirit.
To report suspected human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP or INFO to 233-733. To learn more about Homeland Security investigations and our efforts to combat human trafficking, please visit our website at www.ice.gov or check out the DHS Blue Campaign at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. For more information on the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network, please visit us at www.saturn.org or find us on Facebook.
Okay, we're back, and I want to thank you for staying with us. We're talking with Tucson Fire Department. We have Michael here, and then we have Jimmy here, and the chief's on the radio listening. I wonder if he's sitting in his driveway. A lot of people don't have radios anymore. Anyway.
Let's get back to you on that, Sherry.
Just a thought. We want to talk a little bit more about things that happen during the holidays that sometimes doesn't happen the rest of the year. Holiday drinking and driving. Not a good thing to do, you know. And I know you guys get called to these accidents that happen. Tell people what they should be thinking about when they're drinking and driving or celebrating the holiday. Jimmy? Where are you, Jimmy?
I'm here. I just... Yeah, we know drinking and driving don't mix at all. If you're going to have any kind of alcoholic beverages for the holidays, stay away from that wheel. There's so many resources out there now to call if you need a lift to go somewhere. It's really inexcusable to ever get behind the wheel when you've had a beverage. So if you're enjoying a drink responsibly, then which is okay to do, do not get behind the wheel. Call a friend, call a family member. Wait it out, you know. There's so many resources that you can call now. Any internet search will give you someone you can call. So that is one thing. When I spent my time in the field running emergency calls, a lot of motor collisions and accidents and serious injuries that were involving alcohol, that was one we went on a lot. Those are always tough because there's always a family member that's affected from that.
Absolutely, and now we have the added situation of marijuana. So, you know, and people don't realize, they think they're done smoking their joint and everything's fine when it stays in your system for several days.
Right, and it's called a DUI, driving under the influence, for a reason. You know, it's not just alcohol, it's drugs as well, and that's just as serious a factor when it comes to your driving ability.
Absolutely. A lot of people are traveling, driving instead of flying, driving long distances. People, you know, they get that, what they call the white line fever. What do you recommend people do if they have to drive a distance, like across the state of Texas, that could take 3 days? What do you tell people to do to prepare for a long trip? Jimmy?
Well, if you're driving with someone, take turns. Definitely, you know, you kind of know your threshold of when you start to get tired. I'll be honest, you could ask my wife, I am not good at driving long distances. Quite frankly, I dislike it. A lot of people like hitting the open road, listening to the music, and about 2-3 hours, man, I'm fading. It's just so monotonous. So I know my threshold. I know where I'm at. So if I'm going to L.A. or if I'm going somewhere, I don't drive overnight. I just know I'm not good at it. I usually get a good night's sleep. That's always important. Make sure you have a good meal, you're ready to roll, get a cup of coffee in the morning, and hit the road. But when I start feeling a little tired, when I know my eyes are starting to bug me, it's time to pull over. Maybe pull over, get a stretch, get some fresh air at a convenience store. But the great thing is, if you're driving with someone, you know, talk to them about before that trip and have a plan to where you're going to switch off. I know it sounds kind of goofy, sounds kind of funny, but driving tired is can be equally as bad as driving under the influence.
Absolutely.
You know, they've done studies and studies after that, and it has the same effect of you. When you're tired and you haven't had enough of sleep, your brain does not operate properly. You don't function properly. Your reflexes are slower, and it's just as bad as driving under the influence.
How about distracted driving? Texting, talking on the phone, eating?
Well, yeah. We Bluetooth is good. That definitely takes away from having stuff in our hands, keeping both hands on the wheel, looking ahead. But, you know, I've read studies that talk about even having a Bluetooth, having both hands on the wheel, still distracts you from concentrating on the road ahead and what you need to be focusing on. So try to limit your conversations when you're driving.
What about people, and this is probably one of the things that makes me absolutely crazy. You'll be driving around and you'll see somebody driving and they've got their dog or their pet sitting on their lap. And, you know, the dog's loose in the car to begin with, but sitting on their lap.
That makes me laugh because yesterday my daughter and I were driving, and sure enough, we pull up to the intersection at a stoplight, and someone was driving next to us. And they had this dog. My daughter thought it was the cutest thing. She's a dog lover, but you know, I don't get that. That doesn't seem like it's the safest thing to me. The distractions of a dog moving around, and you don't know what the dog may react to, and that's going to affect your ability to react to be a defensive driver.
And talk about being a little irresponsible with a little being that usually people love and treat like their child. You wouldn't put your child on your lap
while you're
driving.
Thursday, 12:30, El Vernon and Glenn. I watched the drive turn the corner, turn left in front of me, and he had a toddler on his lap. I was just like, and if I could have gotten his license plate number, I would have called it in. But I was just like, oh, my God, you've got to be kidding.
Well, that's when common sense isn't so common, right, sometimes when we see things like that happen.
Well, somebody should have done something. Ah.
Yeah, that's unfortunately all too common. We do see issues, instances like that quite a bit.
Let's talk about pet safety during the holidays. You've got a lot going on, families in from out of town, or you're going to somebody else's house. What about your pets? People need to be prepared to take care of their animals. This is like the 4th of July. You take care of your animal before you go celebrating because, you know, they're going to be excited. Things aren't an everyday routine now. You've got extra things happening. Have you responded to calls where animals are, you know, having a problem? Is that something that you guys do?
I personally have never responded to an animal call like that. I've been to calls where, you know, dog bites or aggressive dogs. I've never been to a call where there's been an emergency on the animal itself. Typically, we do not respond to those kind of calls.
So if the cat's up the tree, you're not going to respond?
No.
Is this kind of like the snake?
Yeah, like the snake. So, Tucson Fire does not respond to snake calls. If you have a snake that you're concerned about, such as a rattlesnake, stay away. Just get away from the snake. The snake is not going to go out of its way to get you or bite you, that contrary to what people think.
Hunt you down.
They're just passing through. You're too big of a food source for them. Get away from the snake. It will leave eventually. And there's always a lot of good companies that you can call in the city of Tucson. Small businesses that'll be more than happy to come out and remove that rattlesnake if need be. But the best thing is let the snake go. It'll be on its way. Make sure you keep your kids away from it. Cats and trees. Cats will always get out of a tree. I know that's kind of the in the
one way or the other.
Cats always seem to land on their feet when they fall. So yeah, we don't respond to those type of calls.
Go ahead.
We have had the occasional call, Sherry, where a cat has been stuck in a storm drain or an animal stuck in a storm drain. We've helped out there. Actually, over the summer, we had a big group of puppies that were out on an outdoor patio. and the neighbors called in. They were concerned that these animals were out there by themselves. And
it's hot too.
Right. We had some of our crews go out there and help them and speak with the owner and kind of try and figure out that situation. So it does happen. But just the one thing I want to say, and I can kind of go back to some of my experience as a reporter with this. We would go to stories pretty frequently about when it comes to animal people hoarding animals, emaciated animals, things like that. So it really does happen, and those are really tough for someone like me, an animal lover, all of us, to just think that somebody would treat an animal that way. But it definitely does happen. And so the one thing when it comes to pet safety, with our nights getting so much colder, so much quicker, please, if you can, bring your pets indoors at night. Have a warm space for them to just be able to be at night, because it's getting cold. It's getting below freezing out there some nights.
It's getting nippy. Yeah, absolutely. So this is another question I have for you. An emergency vehicle, here's everybody is at a stoplight and there's an emergency vehicle behind you. Usually they go into the left turn lane to try to go around all this traffic. But if the light is red, the person at the light is sitting there parked while the sirens and the lights are going on behind them. What are they supposed to
do? Right. So, you know, that's also a difficult situation for the emergency driver, because there's a lot going on. We're trying to get to emergency, and we understand, as the public, as you're sitting there and a big old fire truck is screaming on you, honking that horn, what we do not want you doing, if you're at a red light, do not pull out in the intersection to try to get out of our way, because we still have no idea what, not the oncoming, but the traffic that's going across is doing. You could pull out and you could get smacked by another vehicle. That's not a good thing. You're supposed to pull to the right, but honestly, sometimes that's not possible when you've got a full intersection. So the best thing to do, if there's an emergency truck coming up behind you, and just if you cannot get to the right, just stay put. Just stay put. Don't move anywhere. That's the best thing to do, because the driver will find a way around to the left. Eventually, that intersection will clear. And most fire department, most what's called an engineer, the engineer is the employee that's responsible for operating the vehicle. I was an engineer for about 7 years for the city of Tucson. When we get to an intersection that's jammed up, that's packed up, eventually I will turn that siren off, because the last thing I want to do is kind of scare a lot of drivers and having them make a move with their car that could be dangerous. And now we have two emergencies, an emergency that we created or emergency that the public created and the emergency we are responding to. So if we pull up behind you and there is nowhere to go and you cannot pull to the right safely, then just stay put. Stay put. We will find our way around to the left. Eventually that light will turn for us. It will be green and people will start clearing to the right and we can get around. So whatever you do, do not panic. Just to get out of the way, just for the sake of getting out of the way. Did that kind of clarify it a little for you?
It does. Don't you have some type of a remote control that'll change the light from red to green?
Oh, I wish we did. I wish we did. We have what's called the Opticon system, and it's a signal that comes from our truck, and it's a direct signal to the light. And you'll see when those lights are flashing, that means we are coming above the stoplight. There's
right.
A little light up there that puts out a bright flash.
A disco light.
That means we have activated that Opticon. And what is supposed to happen is that light is supposed to change for us. Now, 9 times out of 10, it works. There's the occasional time technology fails. Technology is not always 100%, and it may not work. And that's those situations that get a little hairy, and that can be kind of concerning. And that's those situations, if that light is staying red and it's not turning green for us and there's nowhere for the cars to go, just stay put. But, yes, there's that Opticon that is changes the light for us, turns it to green, allows everyone to safely move forward and get to the right so we can go around.
Can that system be installed in a private vehicle?
You know what? I've never thought about that. I'm sure it could, but
I think it would be awesome.
I don't know.
Highly legal.
Probably not a good idea.
Well, I didn't know, officer. I think that would be great. Just go through town, never have to stop. So let's talk about little kids, because adults sometimes during the holidays, they forget that, you know, we've got little kids. They're busy cooking or partying, and little kids have a tendency to, those swimming pools don't go away just because it's winter. So what do you recommend people to do, Jimmy, with their swimming pool In house safety, I mean, there's things that you could put on your house to make people know that you're going in and out or something, right?
Yeah, so in the city of Tucson, there's a code requirement to have a barrier around your pool. And if that barrier is a fence with a gate, just be diligent in verifying that that gate has a lock on it and it cannot be opened by a toddler. That's a whole, and that needs to be taught to other adults and other children in the family. I got three kids, a 15-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And my 13-year-old and 15-year-old know that they're equally responsible for keeping that fence secure just as much as the adults are. So if they happen to go in that pool for any reason, maybe to fetch a ball that went over, maybe, you know, I mean, in the winter it's a little cold, but if they're going to go swimming on their own, they need to close that fence and they need to lock it. You're right. That is a very serious subject. So, and mistakes are made. That's why the entire family needs to have a responsibility and a role in making that happen. You were talking about sensors or maybe audible alerts inside the home.
Right.
There are some systems to where when you open your door to go to the backyard, there is a beep that sounds and it lets people know that, hey, someone is exiting the house. That is a good system. It is better than nothing, no doubt about it, but nothing replaces a barrier around that fence. Because we all know how many times, if you have a party and people are inside, let's say you got 15, 20 people, which should not be happening during COVID, we know that, but let's just talk about normal circumstances. That door is opening and closing and beeping. It's going to be very difficult for adults to always go check who's going out, who's going out. It is a prevention type of method, and it does help, but nothing replaces a good barrier around that pool.
Right, and also, you know, just and that's and B, barriers is the B in the ABCs of water safety. You know, A is for adult supervision. Always have an adult anywhere where there's a pool or spa, and there could be kids around. B is for barriers, as Jimmy has been mentioning, and then C is for CPR classes. If you're a parent with a young child, you should try and get to some CPR classes and just have a basic understanding of how that works.
Does the fire department offer CPR classes?
So our life safety team works, in non-COVID times, works with people and conducts classes and things like that. We are facing certain challenges right now. I'd have to see exactly what they're doing.
So maybe, you know, like the Red Cross, maybe they...
Absolutely.
They do classes.
I have directed people to the Red Cross myself for classes.
Okay. And another thing that people have to keep in mind is pet doors, doggy doors. My friend had a child go through the doggy door and go out into the backyard and was out there by themselves, like 2 years old, with the big swimming pool, and they didn't think that the kid would go through the animal door. It's not built for kids, but it happens,
yeah.
So you have to consider it.
Kids are a lot more creative than we are, that's for sure. And like I said, I've had three of them, so I understand. Sometimes they amaze me with what they come up with and what they figure out. So, yes, just like... Michael said, and I should have added that, he was spot on, adult supervision. Because I do remember a time when my son, I don't know how old he was, I can't recall, he might have been three. I think by that time he was starting to learn how to swim, but he ended up getting some kind of step stool to try to get over the fence. So even though you have a barrier, it's not 100 proof.
Yeah.
So that A for adult supervision is huge. Those two A's and B's for preventing the emergencies. So the C would be, CPR would be responding to if there was an issue where you had to help with a near drowning.
Let's talk about choking hazards. Somebody's choking, what do you do? Jimmy, quick.
Well, okay, if they're young, 2 years or younger, you put them over on their chest, put the chest on your hand, and you take the palm of your hand and you give some nice hard back blows. Not with your fist like punching, but that palm of your hand where it's real meaty. You want to really get that upper back and really give them 4 or 5 or 6 smacks trying to dislodge that item. You can also do the Heimlich maneuver, and that's by turning the person around, having their back facing you, kind of like what we said, but now their back is on your chest, and you take your hands and you right underneath the rib cage, you just kind of give it some inward tugs to try to expel that item. That is something that with training. Certain CPR classes help with that, and that's something you can get online, and you can also get training on how to deal with the choking. But when you're talking about the real little ones, most chokings happen with little ones because their airways are so small. So it's very important that when you're feeding a little one, you cut that food up. You don't let them eat full hot dogs. You don't let them eat full strawberries. You don't let them eat full grapes. You cut those things up into small pieces so it doesn't get caught in their airway, which are very small. So when you have someone little, you definitely want to turn them over and you bang that back and that food will come out. I actually have had it a couple times with my kids. Even when I cut up food, they just happen to eat too fast, too quick. That food gets stuck in their throat and typically they'll cough it up themselves. It's a natural reaction that the body's built to do. But sometimes we as adults have to react and, you know, try to get that food out.
Yeah, I've been in that situation too. It's like,
it's scary.
You respond. Oh yeah, it's scary. It's scary for the kid too.
Like, oh man, I get more nervous when any kid I'm around who starts to choke than any emergency I ever responded to. And it's just, you know, when it's someone, a loved one, and they're real young, like 1 or 2 years old, man, that gets your heart racing.
Absolutely. I want to talk about something that people in Arizona don't do a whole lot of, and I've never understood it. I'm from Chicago. We used our fireplaces a lot, and annually you would have a chimney sweep come and clean out your fireplace. And people here just, you know, they use their fireplace, and they use their fireplace, and they keep using it. Tell me, what are your thoughts about using a chimney sweep? Jimmy?
So, like you said, I just don't think a lot of citizens in Arizona really are aware of fireplace safety, you know, and to their defense, like you said, we don't use them a lot. There's not a ton of education. It's not something that we hit a lot here because, quite frankly, it's not a place like Chicago that reaches those cold temperatures all the time. But the same principles that you grew up on, we need to do here. Just like you said, annually, after the burning season, or I would say after the winter season, would probably be the best time to hire a company to come look inside that chimney to make sure the buildup on the side is not to a point where it could be a fire hazard. That, you know, that contractor will let you know, hey, we probably should clean this chimney so that the inside of this chimney doesn't catch on fire. The other important thing to do is chimneys have, or fireplaces have, those flutes, right, that you can open or close. They need to be open when you burn wood inside your home, because all the smoke and the heat rises, that needs to exit through that chimney to the environment. If you close that flute, all those gases, all that smoke, all that heat will start spreading back into your house, and that's a toxic environment with that smoke.
Yes, it is. And the chimney can actually be cracked too. And if it's cracked or there's a separation in there and that happens over time, you can have a house fire, you know, like in a nanosecond.
Right. That heat source, like we've talked about, can spread into your attic space where you don't see it, and then it comes in contact with those combustibles. You have your oxygen, you have your combustibles, you have your heat, there's your fire.
And let's just say that you haven't used your fireplace in a couple of years and you think, oh, I don't need to have it cleaned or anything like that. Well, think again, because birds love to nest up in there. There's all kinds of animals that'll hang out in your flue or in your chimney. So it's just you never know what kind of environment is going on up in there. So it's definitely a good idea to get that checked out at least once a year.
Animals living in your fireplace. Who'd have thought?
Hmm?
Well, it's a good place. And the Christmas tree, did you hear about that? And in Rockefeller Center, they had a little owl that took the trip and ended up in the Christmas tree. They found an owl in the tree. So when you're bringing your tree home, you need to make sure there's no critters.
Except for owls, squirrels.
And, yeah, any other kind of outdoor resident that might want to come inside, that would be.
So that owl made the trip in the tree, huh? Wow.
It did, and it survived.
That's awesome.
You could tell it was not happy. If you saw the picture of it, that owl did not look happy. Yeah.
I have not. Oh, that's too funny.
Yeah, I thought it was great. Now, you know I'm not going to mention this if it didn't happen. Barbecuing in your bathtub is not a good idea.
I've never heard of that.
Well, it happened.
So I'll just say don't do it.
Don't just because it's cold outside and you don't want to go outside and light the grill, barbecuing in your bathtub's not going to work.
Is this like somebody put the actual barbecue in the bathtub?
No, they put the coals in the bathtub.
Oh, my God.
They put a grate on top of it. They wanted ribs. This happened in Chicago. It was a high-rise. In fact, it was Cabrini Green, if anybody out there knows Chicago. And the building's not there anymore. But it started a fire. And obviously it started a fire. But during the response to that fire, what they discovered is this building had a lot of people in there that maybe were wanted by the police or had warrants out for their arrest. And they had holes in between the apartments. So if somebody's knocking on this door to serve a warrant, whoever was wanted would cut through several apartments to get away and leave. And once they had this barbecue and the place caught on fire and the fire is traveling through all these apartments because there's holes in the wall.
Yeah. Spread through those void spaces.
Wow. Right.
It was actually kind of funny, but, you know, don't barbecue in your bathtub.
Don't even barbecue inside if it's not on the stove. Once again, I'm going back to manufacturer's instructions. use the stove as it's intended. No barbecuing inside at all. That's a big no-no.
Yeah, and the oil fires, the grease fires, if you have to fry your turkey, do it outside. What did you say, 20 feet away from the house?
Yeah, keep it 20 feet away from all combustibles.
You know, just going back to that turkey discussion, we've all seen those videos, right? Those demonstrations where they dunk the frozen turkey into the oil and then there's a huge fire. Well, just to bring those two points up, don't ever cook a turkey that hasn't been thawed.
Yeah.
You should definitely always thaw your turkey in your refrigerator. Don't leave it out on your, you know, your countertop or anything like that. And something that's really, you know, a really good idea if you can is maybe a day before you're going to fry that turkey, take the turkey out to the fryer and put it in there and then fill it with water up until the water is above the turkey level, and then pull that turkey out and dry it and pat it down, and then you'll know exactly how much oil you need to use so that you don't overfill it.
That's a good idea. I hadn't thought of that.
That's a good idea, Mike. Yeah, all right.
Well, Mike, kudos. Kudos to you.
Michael, yeah.
Coming up with stuff here. Okay. Just want everybody to be really safe during this holiday. We've got a couple of months with, you know, things going on. Just be really, really safe when you're driving. Don't drive fatigued. That's just as bad as, you know, distracted driving, and horrible accidents happen that way. Michael, words of wisdom.
I just want to encourage everybody with this, you know, this second surge that's coming through, you know, the U.S. and just the entire world, you know, most of the country right now, just to be extra vigilant. And, you know, if you can, take advantage of the technology that we have in 2020. Use your Zoom, use your Teams, use, you know, alternative methods of chatting with your, you know, your friends and family. You know, my father lives in Asia. He has for years. I talk with him on Skype almost every day. It's not like being in person, but it's still a great way to communicate. And, you know, we can all still show love to everybody that we want to over this holiday and do it safely.
What's he doing in Asia?
My dad's the CEO of an American private school.
There you go. Hmm? Awesome. Very cool. And you talk to him every day?
Every day, even with the time difference. That's right.
That's terrific. I love that.
Good job, Michael.
Yeah, we've got Zoom meetings. Our board meets on Zoom. You can have Zoom cocktail parties. That way you don't have to drive. You can just stay home and Zoom with your friends. So there's ways of doing it. People want to socialize. You can still be social without contaminating each other. And wear your mask. This isn't, you know, a political thing. This is a health thing. Wear your mask. Be smart about it.
Absolutely.
I've got two interns in the studio right now, and they both have their mask on. They can't talk because they have their mask on. So there you go. Okay, I want everybody to stay safe. Have a nice Thanksgiving.
Can I throw one more thing in there?
Absolutely.
And it's something that we're starting to be more aware of, but this is a difficult time for a lot of people. Not everyone has the resources or the family dynamics or the support system at home. Anyone out there who is struggling with mental health, who is maybe getting to that starting to feel a little depressed, starting to feel a little lonely, things aren't going your way, you have to reach out for help. That's something that we tend not to talk about as much. We always talk about what we can see, the people yeah. that are struggling as far as the people that are passing away, which all is, you know, not a very a terrible thing. But those who are struggling mentally, that's a very real issue, and I want to make sure people reach out for help because
get
there
the
is help out there and there is, yeah, get the support. That's a huge thing that we're really finding out that this COVID is really, especially the young people. Kids are resilient, teenagers are resilient, but I got to tell you, man, this is molding and shaping who they are. So we really got to make sure that our young people, especially mentally, are staying intact and are okay.
Okay,
out,
we'll
support each other.
And we'll have resources on our website, lawmatters1030.org. Shop local, stay safe, and we'll see you all next week. Happy Thanksgiving.